Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What is happening, everybody? Welcome back to Tour Life. You got Brody here. It is Tuesday, April 23rd. Yuli should be joining momentarily. Silas is behind the keys. We got a decent show today. Decent show. Lots to discuss. First thing, Jeff Spring will be hopping on here in about 10 minutes or so. And we're going to try to get as much information as we can of what transpired this past week at MCO. For those that don't know, MCO was suspended for a short time because of threats made against one of the players. And we're going to have Jeff coming on to kind of explain exactly what all transpired, and then also maybe what the Disc Golf Pro Tour is going to be doing in the future for player safety, for spectator safety, and all of that. We're going to break down all the stuff that went down on the actual, during the actual tournament on Music City Open with Simon Lizotte, Kristen Tatar. We had some players that we haven't seen in the top 10 in a while, jump up into the top 10. So that was very nice. There were some complaints about the course from some players that we'll address. An issue that maybe Kristen Tatar is taking up that we'll address as well. Then we'll have Edwin Stats going over all the big key takeaways from this past weekend, the wild story of the week. And then I have a lot of listener questions. So we'll try to fly through as many of those as possible on the end of the show. But this is normally where I ask Yuli, how's it going? But Silas, how's it going, brother?
Man, it's going good.
Did we get your audio there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Okay. All right, good.
Okay.
Because the internet went after you last week. Did you see this meme?
Yeah, I did.
Do you have any reply to you going after the Disc Golf Pro Tour's live production and people coming after you for Tour Life's live production?
All right, so here's the thing. First off, this is a free show.
Okay.
Nobody's paying. What's the minimum for Disc Golf? $5.99?
Sure. Yeah, I don't know.
Something like that? Okay, this is free. This is free. Also, I was just coming after their quality, their image quality.
Okay.
Not necessarily their production as a whole, because I know there's a lot of people that do a good job there, you know. There's people, I think their producer worked for ESPN for quite a while.
You don't like their graphics though. You don't like their graphics?
I wish they would use stats a little more, because I think that'd be really cool. But I mean, you know, the whole stats situation is kind of up in arms right now, you know. Without UDisc and all that stuff. So I mean, they're doing what they can, and I get that, but I just wish their production quality, the image quality, was a little better. But how was your week, Brody?
It was good. Me and Kelsey are still, I'm still in Dallas right now. I fly out tomorrow morning to get up to Peoria I'm headed to Morton for Champions Cup. Okay. So excited to get a practice round in tomorrow. I've been playing a decent amount, been putting a lot this week, so that's been good. Been going to the gym. I think I'm down what am I down now? 4 pounds, I think, in the last 2 weeks, which is kind of right where I want to be because I'm adding on muscle and I'm losing fat. So I'm not, if I was literally just trying to lose weight, I could obviously do a lot. I could shed a lot more poundage by if that was my main goal, but I'm trying to get the muscle back on, trying to get quick again, trying to get a little better footwork, trying to do all those things. And I've been back to practicing putting as well. So the game is starting to trend. Obviously, it was pretty much as low as possible these last couple of years. So it doesn't take too much to start going back up, but you know, a couple more weeks, couple more months, and maybe my game will be in a decent spot.
Do you feel like you want to play again? Do you feel that desire to want to play disc golf?
Yeah, like I'm excited to go up and play tomorrow. I'm excited to go play this tournament, which I haven't been excited to really play anything leading up to that. So yeah, definitely has been a change, which is nice. We'll see how it goes. Like I'm not expecting myself to all of a sudden start playing well instantly. So we'll see how that goes. Obviously people enjoy playing good disc golf and not playing bad disc golf, but, and I'm also going, you know, I took a couple week break off tour and I'm going to one of the harder courses that we play all season. So that will be an interesting test. But yeah, we'll see. I'm hoping that I putt decently inside the circle. I'm hoping that I make a couple putts outside the circle. I'm hoping that my attitude and mood stay consistent regardless of whether I'm playing good or bad. I don't want to, you know, throw in the towel and just be like, oh, screw this tournament, whatever, I don't really care. Like I want to have that fight and desire whether I'm 10 over par or 10 under par. And we'll kind of see how it goes from there. Yuli, we got you, brother. Internet issues, as always, Airbnb style, it is what it is. Oh. Okay, before we jump into your week, I'm going to read this ad read real quick. And then I think Jeff Spring is going to be hopping on in a minute. So let me get through this ad read, and then we'll have Jeff Spring on here. So call them what you want, knee knockers, golden nuggets, thigh slappers, but our friends at Manscaped refer to them as the boys. Not every man has children, but every man is responsible for their two boys below the waist. When your little guys have more hair than they need, trust Manscaped for all your grooming dreams. Boys need love too, so join the 10 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com and use our code for 20% off plus free shipping. You heard it here first. The boys are back in town. Every man knows how scary it can get when you go for a close shave below the waist. That's why I trust Manscaped for all my sensitive areas. Introducing the Lawnmower Family, Lawnmower 3.0 Plus, the 4.0 Pro, and the 5.0 Ultra. All three ball trimmers. Isn't it awesome? Boys need love too. And for this reason, each trimmer is equipped with skin-safe technology, an LED spotlight, and unique features for different grooming needs. For basic trim, go with the 3.0 and work your way up to the 4.0 plus the 5.0 for the ultimate grooming experience. Manscaped has you covered. These trimmers come with a travel case and even a travel lock feature to avoid any accidental powering and or weird looks in the airport. That is right. It is on the cutting edge of cutting pubes. Wow. Upgrade the ball trimmer and your life will follow. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code TOURLIFE at Manscaped. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code TOURLIFE at manscaped.com. Thanks to our friends over at Manscaped for sponsoring today's episode. All right, Yuli, while we have a little bit of time before Jeff Spring jumps on, do you want to kind of go through your past week up there at MCO?
Yeah. Yeah, no problem. Started off the week pretty rough, honestly. I had a super late night from some technical difficulties over at the Jomez house. And I didn't get a lot of sleep the night before the practice round, so I was dead. We had to drive, obviously, to get there. And I was grumpy the whole practice round. it was one of those days where I was like, man, I don't want to be here. Like, I have to kind of take it easy. And the course ended up being like super long and difficult that day because the wind had switched and it was just a straight headwind. It actually flipped opposite for the tournament. So I didn't really go in with a great mindset. I was actually thinking about not playing. I thought there was a couple holes that were awful out there. But then I got a couple more practice rounds in and I felt pretty confident going into the tournament and just didn't play very good. I caught a couple bad breaks, like some rollaways and stuff that really cost me some momentum. And I just wasn't there mentally. I think my mental was here. And then I felt like judgy with myself for not sticking to my guns and not playing the tournament and resting the body to come to here. But I mean, that's just part of it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's tough when you have a massive tournament looming right behind, you start, you know, questioning whether should you play in this tournament to kind of, there's not like a right or wrong answer. I think that's the tricky part of like,
yeah,
should you rest and gear up for the major, or will you be better, you know, maybe having a good finish and then leading into the major? I don't think there is a right or wrong answer. And I think everyone's answer might change too as it goes.
Right. Right. Like if I were to have played and made a great finish and felt great coming in this tournament, you know, this is a completely conversations. That's not the case. And I didn't have a great finish. I played really good though. I really did. I made the choices I needed to make. I felt like I executed the shots, and I honestly think just a couple rollaways and stuff like that kept me from a solid finish. And so I am confident going into this week, which is really the main thing.
Yeah. Just feeling good about your game, especially on a course that requires probably the most precision off the tee of any courses that we play. So I think Jeff Spring is trying to connect right now, which I'm excited to have him on, not because of the topic we're going to talk about, but I'm excited to like hopefully answer, or hopefully he has the answers that a lot of people are asking with what ended up going down last week. So we now have Jeff Spring of the Disc Golf Pro Tour joining us again here on Tour Life. Jeff, we appreciate it. I know you're on the West Coast, so busy with conferences out there. We appreciate you jumping on here.
Yeah, no problem. Hopefully you guys can hear me okay. I'm out at the Sports ETA Symposium trying to work with some sports commissions from cities across the country, but happy to jump in and thanks for having me.
Of course. So obviously this past week, I don't think anyone can expect something like that to happen. And I don't know if there was protocols of how the Pro Tour was going to handle it in place already, but can you just, for the people that might be listening and not know exactly what went down, can you just start to finish of what happened to, you know, where we're at now of the situation?
Yeah, happy to jump in. I'd love to start by, you know, saying that we did put a statement out about this. And so you can go to the website and read most of what we're able to say, you know. And the other thing is that we worked directly with Metro Police, and there's an ongoing investigation with Nashville PD and Metro Police, you know, and they've advised us on, you know, maybe not disclosing too many details. So I'll share what I can. You know, I also want to clarify that there was no specific threat. So, you know, I think that maybe some language about a mass shooting threat got out there, and that's not the case. It was targeted at one of the competitors in the event. And so, you know, you asked about the timeline. We do have security protocols on site, and we basically notified the police department as soon as we got a threat in, and it came to the tournament director that morning. So that we bumped it right up to the police department, which, you know, before each event, we talked to EMS and police from the local city or municipality and make sure that they're aware that we're having an event, make sure that we have a recognition and a quick line of contact, whether it's with an ambulance or EMS or, you know, police and fire. So this one went to police and they listened to the message and bumped it up the chain. And they gave us guidance that we basically followed throughout. So when I say, you know, it was basically all through police guidance. We don't have specialists for dealing with threat on the tour. So that's why we rely on local police enforcement for this type of stuff. The initial response went to a lieutenant, and he was going to bump it up to his superior officer. We were waiting and informed the player that the threat was against and brought them over with the security officer on site, disclosed the nature of the threat at that time. When the lieutenant got back to us, he actually asked for a pause in play to get more resources there so they could check the site, check the perimeter, and make sure that they felt comfortable with us proceeding.
And that's when you suspended, you put out that the event was currently suspended.
When we heard from the lieutenant, yeah, that okay. they would like a little bit of time to allocate a few more resources and to check the site. So he was able to come down, and you know, they're able to check the venue. They had given us the guidance to bring people off the course, and so the course could be cleared and everybody could go back through. They asked us to implement bag checks and have some additional security personnel on site, some off-duty police officers, some more Metro Police, some of the security firm that we had hired for the event. And you know, they said, you know, we'll be monitoring, you know, and doing an active investigation. So they're trying to find the identity of the caller, and they were gonna just, you know, stay vigilant. So, you know, once they said, hey, you know, we're comfortable, we decided to give it a little bit of time, but then restart play. At that point in time, with the police comfortable and with more security detail on site, as well as, you know, kind of the decision was, you know, would we proceed, or really, we weren't going to get any better circumstances. We would just say, hey, the event's off. Since the police were on board with, you know, the tournament proceeding, that's where we went. And fortunately, we were able to continue play without incident. You know, however, we have, you know, done some debriefing and analysis with the PDGA as well. And we have plans to increase security protocols and planning going forward, at least for you know, the foreseeable future, which I'm happy to talk to, but that's pretty much the timeline. If okay. you guys have any thoughts yeah, or questions,
is the bag checks, or, you know, even not allowing people to bring in their disc golf bags, and now everything has to be in clear bag. Like, what are things that we're expecting moving forward here because of something like this, could be a potential risk moving forward?
Yeah, we are, you know, expecting to continue with bag checks. One thing I can say is that Seth Munsey is leading an effort. He's our director of health, safety, and player performance. He's leading an effort to engage with a event security consultant because we are adding more security now going forward, just kind of upping the standard level. That's probably going to include bag checks, but really we want to turn to an experienced expert in event security. Events is a tough business, and, you know, sports, you know, with a lot of people, it's not totally rare for a sporting event to have some type of issue like this. So now that we see this as a potential issue for us, yeah, we're going to get in touch with some experts and make sure that we're not just throwing resources willy-nilly, that we have a plan and execute that going forward.
How's the feedback been from some of the players?
You know, I believe that the majority of the players, you know, were happy to hear that we were following local police guidance. I think that some players, want to know all the details and kind of hear about everything that might be happening or that could happen. I think it's natural for people to be scared. You know, even I or the police or our team, I think, had some apprehension because it's just impossible to kind of remove all threats. So, you know, I understand some players, you know, wanting a little bit more information. You know, we're following police guidance on communication, and they, you know, have their reasons for not wanting to release all details of threats, I think, in these situations. So, you know, we're going to, again, talk to the event security consultant that we're looking to onboard here. And I think with a lot of that going forward, you know, we can get more standard protocol. But in terms of, like, disclosing details of threats right now, we just follow what the police, you know, ask us to do. And I think some players wanted more, and we understand that. It's just that it's a tough situation.
Gotcha. Yuli, did you have anything? Okay. Well, Jeff, we know you're a busy guy, and I appreciate you taking the time to pop on here. I know it was kind of last minute, but I think this was at least helpful for those that maybe had some questions on the timeline, what we can expect moving forward. But I think everyone's, at least I hope most of us can all come into agreement of whether you agree with someone's political views or rules or whatever it is, you know, trying to keep everyone safe. I think that's everyone's main priority. And I know you guys are probably doing the best that you can out there. So we appreciate that.
Yeah. And I'll just echo that. I think we got into this, whether you're a pro player or the tour or the media teams, to kind of bring the sport that we love and beautiful moments to people, to bring joy. And this is the opposite of that. And, you know, every competitor on tour and even the staff that tour around and go out to make these events happen, you know, they we'd announce this type of behavior. You know, everybody should act from a place of humanity and understanding towards each other, no matter who you are and who you are on tour. And so we're going to stay, you know, vigilant. We want to create a safe possible environment for the competitors, and we're going to keep pushing down that path.
Fantastic. Well, we appreciate your time.
Appreciate it.
Good luck with everything.
Thanks,
out guys. There.
All right, yeah,
take
thanks
it
for
easy.
Having me. All right.
Of
bye.
Course. There's Jeff Spring, guys, from the Disc Golf Pro Tour. Man. Yeah, what was it kind of like for you out there? You weren't even at the course yet?
No, I wasn't at the course. I got the text message saying that we had a delay. I didn't know what the delay was. And so I did a little research myself and went through my avenues to find out what was going on. And I got a little information about it. At first it was like, I felt like maybe the tournament wouldn't even happen, honestly, because it sounded pretty brutal as far as the rumors that were spreading around. And so that was my first like thought. And then when they said play was to resume, I went to the same people that I asked before, being like, hey, do we have extra security out there? Like, what's going on? Because it's not a place that I really want to, you know, a situation I want to go into as well. If there wasn't like extra being done. And of course there was, I felt like the pro tour did what they were supposed to do by going through those avenues and everything. And I walked into the place and right away saw extra security and everything. And I felt just fine. I just got to practicing and went about my business, but, it was weird for sure. Especially not being there and not knowing what was going on. Like he said, like the players want to know, you know, we want to know what we're getting ourselves into, what kind of threats were being, you know, brought forth or whatnot. But yeah, we just went about our day after that. And, you know, I feel like maybe I was a little more alert of things going on around me. You're supposed to be, for that round. But other than that, it was just fine as far as that goes. I just hate that stuff happens, man. I mean, like, it's a sporting event. It's just a thing. It's for entertainment. Like, just calm down, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you, it's one thing to see the hatred via text on like Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it, right? And you know, luckily for me, in the position I'm in, or like the career I'm in, I don't really go down that path all that much. Of where, as much as you know, maybe some people completely disagree with this, but I try to stay out of the drama and the crazy, like talking about weird stuff that really fire people up outside of like the actual sport. I love talking about, you know, I'll go to bat talking about who's better, Ken Climo, Paul McBeth, Cal. I love that stuff.
Right.
But like the stuff that's off of it, when you start adding in like your political ideology, your religion, that's where I kind of tap out. And it's one thing to see that hatred and see how fired up people get on certain topics on Twitter or X. And then it's a completely different avenue when they like take it to what I would consider like real life, right? Because like people will say whatever behind a keyboard. You know, someone might say like, Brody, you're the worst ever. You suck. I hope you die. And then they'll get up from their computer and be like, hey guys, you want to go out and throw the football? You know, doesn't seem like it's a real thing. And that's why I think a lot of people get away with saying stuff behind a keyboard. But when it actually comes to real life, like this was, where someone actually went, reached out to the tournament director and posed a threat. Yeah, none of us really want to see that. So, you know, hats off to the Disc Golf Pro Tour, because I guarantee none of them were waking up that morning thinking this was a possibility. And, you know, I doubt that they had practice, like, hey, what do we do? So there was probably a lot of quick thinking, and I think they did a good job. I will say, like, it is probably unfortunate that events like this or things like this have to happen for certain things to change. Like, I think it is going to be a good thing that they start doing bag checks going forward. Another thing that they probably need to look on is like having the player lot a little bit more secure. You know, you can go to certain tournaments and anyone can kind of get into the player lot. And that's scary if someone's just waiting there by your car, by your van. We also experienced, like, at Worlds, everyone was kind of getting on the shuttles together, spectators, fans, and players. We were all on the same shuttle. Some people might view that as like, oh, this is awesome. But I could also see the other side of the coin of where it's like, that could be an issue. And certain things like that just probably need to kind of get worked out and solved. And, you know, I don't know. It's disc golf. At the end of the day, is a very young sport still. It hasn't been around a lot. And so there are going to be growing pains and a lot of things to learn. And hopefully this really terrible situation that probably caused not the greatest environment for a lot of people playing in this tournament, hopefully something good can come from this, right? And hopefully moving forward, they can set up tournaments to where everyone feels a little bit safer, spectators feel safer. And I don't know. I guess that's the positive way of looking at a situation that was very negative.
Right.
All right. Well, I want to jump into this first question. This is from Siege D1. He says, Yuli, you, Germ, and Paul were very critical of the course design during your practice round. And you kind of mentioned this a little bit. Did your thoughts change after playing it and after watching Simon play it?
No, not really. Honestly, it did to a point. I'm not playing tired, so it's not playing as long. But I'm still pretty critical about it. I mean, we played the worst hole I've ever played, which was hole 11.
It's
ever.
Yeah. See, this is where let's talk about this a little bit. I think there is a massive disconnect between the online viewer, the person watching the tournament, and people that have played the course or the pros. Because first thing, we got to stop changing the names of these courses. Second thing, we got to stop changing like the layouts. Like, we got to get to the point of where I was so lost, Yuli, watching coverage. Like, I was trying to remember, like, what hole is this? And because of just where you guys started, they completely changed the routing. So the sooner we can do that, the better. So where it's like, because in my mind, like, MCO was like hole 16 and 17. It's like, oh, I can't wait to see how those holes, you know, play down the stretch. And then those holes don't even exist anymore. So the sooner we do that, and this is a perfect example. Like, you just talked about hole 11. When I'm watching that hole, I didn't see that there was a problem with it from watching.
Yeah. So let me explain the shot you had to throw. You had to throw a 550-foot stall shot over the trees that came like sideways to the basket, which is I've got a lot of crap for this, and people say it's a skill that you have to have. And I 100% agree. Sure. If that's what you're going for, then I don't ever want to play your course again. you know what I mean? Because I birdied the hole as well. It's not like I didn't birdie. I didn't birdie in the tournament, but I birdied it twice in practice. I was complaining about a hole that was just bad. Like, there was no way to like really control your shot. Simon did very well. But if you just look at the hole in general, like, you can't see it. That's one thing that I don't like.
Okay. Yeah. You can't tell that from coverage.
And here's the thing. The hole wasn't designed to be there. So this is a point I want to make to everybody who has like been pretty critical of me saying how bad the hole was, and they're like tagging me and Simon Park in this hole and stuff. I talked to the designer, the course designer, and here's really what happened. A tree fell down. And the parks department said, okay, you can't keep the basket there. You got to move it. And that was the only place they could move it. That's the reason that hole's there. The hole's not there because the course designer was like, oh yeah, this is going to be good for the pro tour. The hole was there because it was just, that's where they could put it. Here's my problem with that. That's not a good reason to put it there. Then you make a new hole somewhere else. Like, you don't just, oh, we can't put it here. All right, I guess this is the shot now. Like, that's a silly reason to have a hole anywhere. I asked in a certain group or whatever, I said, why can't we just play the FPO T-pad? It was a fine hole. There was no reason for us not to play that hole. It would have had just as probably more stroke separation. Could have been funner. It'd been easier to film. It would have been a lot of things. And so that was just one of the holes. The rest of the course, it really didn't play bad. It has some of the best holes that I've played on the tour. Like hole 8, I think, is one of my favorite holes. Hole 8 is an amazing hole.
It takes me so long to try to remember what these holes are.
I think it's old. I think it's like old 17. It's a tough par 4 where you can throw the big highs or you go down the gut and there's OB.
Oh, that's one of the best holes we play all year.
Yeah, it's a great hole.
Par 4.
And the par 5s were really good, I thought. Honestly, mm-hmm. I thought the par 5s were really good. They took out some trees on that little dinker that was the second worst hole I've ever played the last time we played it or whatever. It was like
there was a couple like little dinking par 3s that like just felt like connecting holes.
Yeah, they made that one actually. I felt like it was a pretty good hole aside from the tee pad like facing this way and you're going this way. That's the only knock I have on that. But all in all, it wasn't that terrible of a course, really. It played easier than I thought it was going to play because the wind switch. Listen, if that wind switch is in the opposite direction, those scores are cut in half. Like it really is wind dependent out there. But I'm just, when I get to holes like that and I hear those answers, it's like depressing. Like, oh, I'm on the pro tour. This is the best league. This is the best place you can play as a professional disc golfer. And they're like, it'd be like the basketball rim accidentally falling down and then being like, yeah, we can't really move that up because there's a cable that broke up there. So we're going to play it. We're going to play at 8 foot, you know, or we're going to play at 13 foot. There's people who could probably dunk on it. That's fine. Guess it's a skill you have to have. Like that's silly to me. You know what I mean? Like the standardization of our sport is like, there's a little there, but then when I hear this kind of stuff, it sucks. It really does. And it's no detriment to the tournament director, the staff or whatever. Like that's just what the cards they were dealt. That's where the hole has to go.
Yeah. I don't know how, you know, we'll see it in the comments, I guess, on this video. I don't know if people liked the course or didn't like the course. My opinion, and again, I think it changes a lot. Because I feel like I didn't mind the course that much when I played there. But I didn't get to play this one this year. So I'm just going straight off of just watching it on coverage. Didn't really do much for me. And maybe that's a lot of it. Maybe that was a lot because of the way the coverage is set up. They don't do a great job of maybe like showing the holes and showing what you have to do. Also, I cannot stand them cutting to catch cam so fast in the flight because I really get discombobulated on where the discs are supposed to be land. It's really not great. So this was the first time because Jonesboro didn't really change that much. Like the holes didn't really change that much. They just rerouted them. Right. So there weren't a ton of new holes. You were just playing them in a different order. Here. They changed a lot of the holes. They got rid of a lot of holes. They added a lot of new holes and watching it. It was just, it wasn't as enjoyable because I didn't really have that like memory of anything from when I played it. So I don't know if that's more consistent with like the average viewer, because the average viewer is not going to play these courses. That was just something that I noticed.
Yeah, I just, I also have like, I realize I have like a completely different view of what a course should be like and how a course should play than a lot of people. You know what I mean? Like, that's just fact. Like, some people really like, Simon, for one, really likes being able to throw it wherever he wants. He's been open about that. He doesn't like out of bounds. He wants to kind of throw it wherever. And I couldn't be on the opposite side of the spectrum. I think the main reason is I really enjoy the mental aspect of pressure, situations, decision-making in golf. And I feel like the course designs, especially at the beginning of the year, it takes a lot of that out.
There wasn't that many people playing holes differently. That's what I think is, you look at all the four guys that were on lead card at the end, they all kind of have different games. Like, I wouldn't consider them all similar playing styles. And a lot of holes, they were trying to throw the same shot. There was that one hole where they made the little mando, so you can't, like, the par four that you can't, like, we used to just chuck over the trees. They made that little mando. Yeah. Like, that was one of the few holes where I was like, okay, some people are, like, playing like Simon, where he's laying up and then trying to go through the gap. And there's other people, like Paul, who's trying to throw, like, a forehand through the gap. Like, to me, like, that's cool, seeing like the different playing styles, different strategies.
Sure.
A lot of these holes, it just seemed like everyone was throwing the same shot. So I don't know. I agree with you. I think more strategy and down the stretch, that really comes in, because when you have like pressure on you, you can make the wrong decision.
You can make the wrong decision. It gives the audience something to watch and the announcers something to talk about. You know what I mean? Like, you can then start talking about situations and what are they going to do here? You know what I mean? Like, this is a tough spot. Like, what is it? What's the decision going to be right here? And it brings some drama to the thing. We just don't have that right now. I just see a bunch of people throwing their disc on Anheuser as far as they can and then chipping over stuff, throwing over these trees. And like,
it's really hard to get out of position.
I don't know.
It's really hard to get out of position.
Yeah, like, you're like a really good shot compared to a really bad shot in that situation. There's no difference. There's far right and there's far left and there's far in the middle. You know what I mean? Like everybody is throwing basically a good shot, even though like for instance, I forgot what hole it is myself. It was old hole one.
Yes.
Old hole one. Like, I'm watching people throw it over the top on as much Anheuser as they can, or some people trying not to do that, and like they're going sideways. And I know for a fact, like, listen, this guy is 100 feet from where he's trying to throw it, but he doesn't care. There's it, like, he got up, looked, just threw it. Didn't matter. There's no decision making. It's just like, put my disc on Anheuser as far as I can. And
sorry. She's wondering if the dogs have been fed. The dogs have been fed.
Put your disc on Anheuser and throw it as far as you can, and there's no trouble. Like, these discs are going into the spectator area that where the hole is not designed to be. And then they're just chucking spikeheisers over the bunker trees, and it doesn't matter. Like, everybody's kind of getting the same score. There's no scoring separation because
you gotta have OB, man. People like, hate it, but there's not. Unless we start having the hole you're talking about, old hole one, unless we start having where discs are falling into 5 foot tall grass, which one, that's going to be a nightmare to like have people try to find their disc in that. There's no really, like you're saying, you're just far right instead of far left or far middle. Like, there's not really.
Yeah. Or short middle. Like, it doesn't change. Like, there's no difference between being 350 feet away from the pin, 250 feet away from the pin, 100 feet not right and playing left. There's no difference in that area. It's all the same
that
shot.
Hole one, what they could have done, Yuli, to make it interesting is if they would have that tree bunker that's short of the basket. if they would have on the far left, if they would have put Amando left of that. So you have to attack the green going left of that tree bunker. Now those guys that are far right, they can't just throw a spike hyzer over it like we were seeing it. I think you either have to add Mandos, you either have to add OB. You have to add these things or else you're really not going to see people throwing off the tee. It's only going to matter on a couple holes. It just doesn't really matter on a lot of these holes.
And you're going to see people like get beat the course. It's not going to change anything. Like these guys are going to, somebody's going to get through. And hats off to Simon, who played an amazing event.
I mean, he putted.
I mean, just absolutely.
He putted insane.
Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Like he just absolutely ran away from the field. They weren't even close. It looked like he was just on a whole nother level.
You got to coast in the second nine.
Right. But that's my feeling about those types of situations. I still like playing the course. I love the challenge. I love going out there and compete. Like, for sure. Like, everybody thinks that I'm, like, going out there bummed. No, if I start, like, it's going to be a good time.
It's another tournament where, you know, double digits every day basically wins, right? It's just, it is what it is. What'd you think? Did you get to watch any live? I saw a lot of really positive feedback about Zach Melton being on the ground and being the, you know, having the mic or whatnot on the ground.
I did. And he was awesome.
Yeah.
He was awesome. Probably, he's got a great voice for it.
Probably more of that. He's got a great, he also has a great like rapport with a lot of the players. He brings a little bit, I mean, you can be professional. I don't think disc golf needs to be like that top end professional broadcast. I think it's okay to show a little personality, have a little fun, which he definitely does. So I saw a lot of positive things for Zach Melton, and hopefully, you know, that's something that we might see more in the future. Another thing I want to shout out, like this was an insane moment. Hopefully a lot of people got to see this. This was Jeremy Colling, who they got to see him on 18. I love that they were able to capture this. They captured him checking scores to see where he was at before his putt. And then he,
oh, this is incredible.
And then he was like, oh, okay. Like I can basically three putt this and be fine. Or if I one putt this, you know, if I make this, I actually go forward. I love that. And then he makes this absolutely insane nose up putt floater through the trees to finish off a really great round, a really great final round. He ends up going 65, 56, 58. So kind of a little bit of a slow start there, or else he would have actually, if he would have started like decent, he would have been like in the running for, you know, first place if he would have had a good first round. But great finish there, birding the last three holes and getting a top five, which this was his first top five since 2019 USDGC. Crazy.
Yeah, he's been on fire lately, man. He's got a lot of confidence. He won that tournament from Pernicious Ridge,
I see it in my head. I can't get the.
Yeah. I can't. There ain't no way I'm getting it. But he wins that tournament in a stacked field, a really good field, and he's just been playing it great ever since. He had a hot round even at Jonesboro. He shot like a 9-under, and then comes in this tournament Persimmons Ridge, and he's just been playing good. So it's good to see, you know, it was fun to watch him play good. Macbeth play good. Dickerson played pretty good, and Simon just run away from the tournament. It was kind of people were saying like a little throwback, you know what I mean? Because they didn't have the Gannons, Barellas, the young guys up there
in
the top
too far
four.
Behind. But it was nice to see some of the players that we haven't seen in a while towards the top of the leaderboard. Eagle McMahon withdraws. We did mention this last week that he was planning on, or we were speculating that he was planning on trying to play this event, even though he did say Champions Cup was going to be when he was going to be back. It looked like he had signed up for some sort of practice round leading into the event, which I think led us to believe he might be playing. And then he explained in an interview that he was reaching into his car and hurt his back. Is this now this is something that, like, I would say at my age, is this something that we should be concerned with at Eagles age? Is he someone that might just be prone to injuries? We've seen this in other sports where it's like, ah, that guy always gets injured. Is that starting to kind of be the case here with the Eagle?
I mean, to an extent, he's been injured up for a long time with little different things here and there. But last year, he played 21 yeah. tournaments. Like, he played kind of a long season and played very well. He finished like fifth on the pro tour. Like, he had a solid season and he missed some this year. And that was with his injury of his shoulder. And then he got surgery. He's been doing rehab and everything. And I know this stuff because I just played with him for the Jomez practice round. So sorry to spoil who's going to be on there. That'll be out on mm-hmm. Thursday. But he said his back's feeling a little better and he's ready to play Champions Cup. All so right.
There we go. Ready to go. Gannon Burr had some serious, serious putting struggles. That was crazy. That was the worst putting performance I've ever seen him have in a round. I mean, missing, yeah. Not just missing, you know, 30 to 35 footers, but missing like 15 to 20 footers of where you're just like, was he also maybe thinking like, all right, well, I'm not going to win this tournament. Next tournament's a major. I don't know. It was a weird thing to see. It was very unusual.
I don't know. I saw a lot of people whining about the baskets, like very angry about
it. Tell me a tournament when that doesn't happen.
Yeah, I had a lot of, and I actually want to, I want to talk on that real quick. I got something I want to say. If people are going to tell me that 550 foot distance is a skill, learn it. I'm blasting everybody who gets spit outs. Guess what? Touch with a little or putt with a little touch, because that is a learned skill. I haven't had one in 3 years and I might have one moving forward. In 3 years, my disc has not come back to me off the pole. And at this point, luckily the statistics say that I'm a pretty good putter, which means it's not like I'm just airballing everything, which is the first thing I would say to me. If 550 feet is a skill that I have to learn, then learn some touch with your putter. Because we have to play on those baskets.
Yeah, I'm the same way as you, Yuli, because people always talk about like, oh my gosh, I had so many spit outs, so much. It's like I don't know if I've had like more than two my entire career. Like, there's literally been maybe one or two where I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that didn't go in. Most of the time it doesn't go in. It's like, that was a bad putt. And even there's times where I'm like, yeah, that's a 50, like, it releases out of my hand. I'm like, that's 50-50. It's either going to catch and drop in the basket or it's going to hit and push out. Like, that's just what it is.
Now, there are times when there's a headwind and bad things happen. You're throwing a frisbee into a headwind that wants to fly mm-hmm. and it hits the chains, and sometimes they blow out. I have had spit outs from outside the circle, like 45 feet, but guess what? It's coming in harder.
Yeah.
It's coming in harder. So you take that risk. But I was talking to somebody about it today and they're like, well, you putt like you putting with a pillowcase. And I'm like, I know. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. It's this,
but I mean, I'm just hearing all these people like, look at the basket. Like when Gannon gets a spit out, I'm sorry, but you're throwing it twice as hard as everybody else. It's good because he can take that speed and he can take it to 60 and it's damn near the same putt. But if you decide to tap it in like that, that's what's going to happen.
I like your analogy of saying like, hey, if I'm putting like a pillow and you're like, well, you're putting like a pillow, that's why it's happening. We can say the same thing to being like, you're throwing it as hard as you can. And they're like, yeah, I'm throwing it as hard as I can. I'm trying to throw it over 500 feet. And it's like, well, it's the same thing, right? Like, it's a learned skill. Like, you either have to, you know, AB can throw super hard with really overstable discs and have a much more consistent flight than someone that is throwing 80% and having to flip something up, right? Like, it's a learned skill to throw hard. Right. It's a learned skill to have touch with your putt. So I think both, I think both are like, you can't have one and not have the other.
Right. The veteran basket is one of my favorites to putt on. Everybody hates it. It catches everything, I feel like, for me. It catches high.
It catches
really
high
well.
A lot.
It catches
lot.
On the pole
yeah,
really
it catches
well.
High a lot.
You know what I mean? And then the last thing I want to say about it is I don't like spit outs. I don't want people to get spit outs. I wish they weren't a thing. I really do. But they are. And so there is a way to negate the spit out. Throw it softer. You know what I mean? I wish we had a device that caught everything. If that's the standard that we move to, then great. I'm all for that. Let's put the hockey light at the top of it. If you hit the middle, counts every single time. I'm all for that. But right now, it's not the way that it is. So,
Steven Lazat pretty much won this after the front nine. Going into the final round, it was, you know, it was still an interesting race. You had Paul a couple shots behind. You had who else was a couple? Gannon was a couple shots behind. So there was still some kind of thought of like, ooh, like we might see a nice little close race down to the wire here. And Simon just went berserk mode on the front nine. And, you know, Paul didn't have a bad front nine. I think he was, what, 3 under through the front nine, I believe, something like that. So Paul didn't have a bad front nine. Gannon did not play well. So he kind of fell off the face of contention. So really, after the front nine, it was pretty much locked in. The back nine was just kind of a victory lap there for Simon, which must have been super nice going back to back at this tournament. But yeah, Simon played incredibly well. He went 27 of 28 from Circle 1X. He only missed one putt, which was during the final round. And it was probably one of those putts where it was just kind of like lack of focus, you know, just going up there, going through the motions maybe a little bit. He was 7 of 18 from Circle 2. And he gained 9.23 strokes on the field in putting. So he just put on an absolute putting performance. Yeah. He threw the disc obviously really well as well, but his putt was just insane. If he got the disc within 50 feet, there was a darn good shot that it was going in the basket. And so he ends up running away with this one by 5 shots. Paul McBeth finishes in second. This was a good thing. You know, I think, Paul is probably, you know, I wouldn't put him in the same light as obviously like a Tiger Woods, but he draws the attention to disc golf like Tiger draws the attention to golf, of where people might not have been really, you know, circling this tournament as like, ooh, I need to watch this and tune this one in. But as soon as Paul was up the leaderboard, I would be very curious to see if the numbers jumped on Saturday and Sunday, because a lot of people were like, ooh, I want to see this. So I still think he does have that pull, whether he's in the mix or not in the mix consistently, but him being in the mix, I think is a good thing for disc golf. I think it brings in a lot of people that, you know, were pre-COVID disc golfers, if we want to put that as an era. And yeah, it was good to see him back up there and had a very solid tournament. And this is also, this kind of also goes to show a little bit. This is a tournament that he probably wins. I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years ago, he wins this tournament. Like, if you go back, he didn't play incredible, but he wins this tournament. But the field is so deep now that a couple missed putts here and there in that final round, and he loses by 5. Right. And then he had Ricky on his heels. He had Chris Dickerson on his heels. He had guys right there, but that just shows you it's so hard to win this year and moving forward, because there always, it seems like there's always going to be someone that just has a great tournament. And even if you look at the final round, like Simon had a couple things go his way too, right? It could have been a lot closer, but you kind of need to have some of that stuff go your way to win.
I'm with you, man. Watching and commentating on the final round, Simon caught a lot of good breaks, but he also capitalized, which great players do, One thing I will say about Macbeth watching that, he didn't look sharp, which is a good sign for him. Like, that didn't look like A plus.
Yeah, he didn't play incredible. No.
No, it didn't look great to me. To the eye test, I was like, oh, this is like kind of like almost a B, maybe a B for him. Which, to me, moving forward, that's a good sign for all the Paul Macbeth fans, because I think there's a lot he can improve on moving forward. And a second place finish with a B game right now, that's pretty good news.
Yeah. No, and it's great timing, you know, going into the first major of the year. The Pro Tour put out this graphic that I found was kind of interesting. People are running around with this term, the old guard. They kept saying it on coverage. You guys kind of hinted at it a little bit. Maybe you didn't use the actual term, the old guard. But looking at the leaderboard this past week, you have Simon Lizotte, Paul Macbeth, Ricky Wysocki, Chris Dickerson, and Jeremy Colling all in the top five. Now, these were all guys that have been touring for 10 plus years, right? I think that's fair to say. Yeah. The only thing is, like, when I think of the old guard in sports terminology, I don't think these guys would be on that list. To me, this isn't the old guard. The old guard to me is like another generation above these guys. Now, if we want, and this is where I've kind of pushed back with some people before, of where some people think like disc golf is becoming like, to compete, you have to be young. And if we want to make that comparison, like, are you trying to tell me that disc golf is like gymnastics? To be a peak gymnast, you've got that window of what, 15 to 17 for females? Like, that's the window. And then once you're past that window, you're downhill from there. Like, is that what we're trying to say? To be a peak disc golfer, you have to be 18 to 24? Or is it, well, you have a bunch of these guys that are starting to play disc golf at a much younger age. There's a lot more opportunities for them to play. There's a lot more technology, a lot more coverage. There's a lot more in disc golf. So players are able at a younger age to get better faster. So when they come on tour, they're much more prepared. They have much more, you know, the skills are more, you know, you have a Gannon Burr that can throw a forehand, can throw a backhand, can putt, has a really good overall game. To me, it's like, it's more that, like, I don't think that when AB turns 32, it's like, oh, all right, he's done, right? Like, I don't, and I'm looking at these guys. Simon's 31, Ricky's 30, Paul's 33. Like, Jeremy's almost 40, so I guess he could kind of be on that, like, borderline. But, Yuli, do you think this is, like, the old guard? Are we going to be saying the same thing when AB is 31 years old, that he's the old guard?
You know, I don't know. It's tough to say because of how long they've been touring, and the, you know, like, if you think about it like this, in our game, we have such young athletes coming in when they're like Gannon was 16 years old, winning majors. Like, him compared to Simon is that's really young and brand new to the sport. I think if you look at it as far as how long they've been touring, and you've just seen these guys around for so long and playing at a high level for as long as they have, it's been what, 10 years these guys have dominated the sport?
Yeah, probably. I'm wondering if that's minimum. That has to do with it more than their actual age.
And then we have, in the last like 4 or 5 tournaments, the script is completely flipped, where you have AB, Nicholas, and Gannon destroying everybody, mm-hmm. all young. And so when you think about that, and then you think about, okay, and now you have Simon win, it completely different things. Because Simon's been around the game since he was 16. That's a long career to this point of playing professional disc golfer. So I could see where people would make that comparison. And I do think it's a young man's sport. And the only reason I think it's a young man's sport right now is because the game has changed so much in this span. So, like, skills are developed for these courses by young people. Period.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you take my generation, you can take maybe three people from that generation that can throw it 600 feet still.
The skill level in disc golf has changed drastically in 20 years.
It's changed. And it's hard for somebody who's had those skills for so long to develop these new skills, right? That is a tough thing to do. And so you're going to see these people drop off. I mean, how many people are left from, let's say, even my generation, Paul's generation? I'm a little bit before Paul, but not much. Like, how many people are left? I'm pretty sure that's the old guard. Like, it's Macbeth, okay, Germ, Nico, Bradley Williams. This is the old guard. We're the oldest people on tour. Like, if you look who's on the tour, who else could be considered the old guard on the pro tour?
No, it's a great point. I don't think they're really, with how the tour is currently set up, I don't really think there is necessarily an old guard that tours all the time. Like, the old guard would be like, when we go to Worlds and Feldberg's in the field, or Nate Doss comes and plays, or Barry Schultz, or those, to me, those are like more the old guard, because I think we'll see, 10, 15, 20 years from now, we'll see. But I don't think when AB is 31, I don't think we're going to call him the old guard, because I think when AB is 31, Simon is going to be 40. And if Simon wanted to still compete at majors and a couple events here and there, I don't think Simon at 40, as long as he stays healthy, I don't think Simon at 40 has no shot at winning a tournament. Like, do you think his game is going to, if he continues to stay healthy, you think his game is going to deteriorate in a way to where he can't play well at Northwood? If he putting is not something that, like, you're going to lose. If you're an incredible putter at 20 and 30, like, you're going to stay an incredible putter throughout your entire career. Putting's not really going to change if you're a good putter.
I don't think that's correct. I've seen a lot of people completely lose their putt later in their career.
That's like an anomaly. Like, Paul, Ricky, those guys have been great putters their whole career. I don't think all of a sudden when they turn 40, the year 40 is going to change. You're talking about people that have like a legitical, like, mental issue with their putt.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm talking strictly just like age, like getting,
I don't mind. Older. Like I said, I don't mind it for the reason that they're the oldest guys on tour.
No,
man.
I agree. I agree with you. It's just, I don't.
Like, that's the old guard that we have. Like, I
know
see,
what you're
I
saying.
Your
it's just,
for
it's,
sure.
I think we're just in a weird transition point of where we don't really have, like,
exactly. That's what,
like,
I'm,
do you
saying
think
too.
There are going to be any guys in you? Do you think there will be, these guys that are 25, like Calvin right now, he's 27. The guys that are like the 25 to 30 range right now, do you think 10 years from now, all those guys are going to not be on tour anymore?
I don't know, because their skill level has developed to this. It depends on course design. Like, every year they push tee pads back, man. And if they keep doing that, eventually age deteriorates your distance and you're not going
to
be able to compete, especially
flip your stuff.
No, there's no,
right?
No, there's no courses that allow that. Like, now you take Barry Schultz and Dave Feldberg and you put them at Winthrop. Of course they compete, because guess what? You throw a bad shot, you get punished.
Yep.
But those guys aren't going to compete out here.
Certain
it's course, just not going to
yeah,
happen.
I agree. Certain, like, you put those guys on Portland Open, not going to be good.
No chance. And that's what I'm saying. I don't know what the courses are going to look like then, but it's very possible that it can be the case, because we're seeing it right now.
Yeah. It's just going to be interesting 10 years from now. Do we see, all the guys that are 25 to 30, do we see all those guys now? They're 35, 36, 37. Are those guys still touring, or is disc golf going to be more like a gymnastics where it's like you've got between 18 and 25, and then very few people are going to be competitive after 25?
It's possible, because you think about pitching in baseball, football, where you're throwing things.
Yeah, no, football, you're 100%. Like, a running back, you're not going to really see any running backs in their late 30s.
I think we're starting to see that disc golf is because of the way these courses are designed and stuff, and the way that these kids are pushing the envelope with distance. I think we're going to see that more and more and more, that your body's just not going to be able to take it, you know, and eventually it's going to wear down.
Yeah. Seb wants to know, are older seasoned vets stepping up in light of how competitive the field has gotten, or is MCO's top five a fluke and more so a testament to the player's individual greatness?
I would hope to think that they're getting better. They better be.
I think the fluke was all these guys had
all of them at the same time.
I think the fluke was just all these guys played well in the same weekend. I think that was more.
No, that's what I mean. All at the same time.
I don't think the course provided. I don't think the course was fluky where it allowed these guys to play. Like, I think they just played all really well all the same week. It was a crazy weekend for sure. Because, I mean, it wasn't like all the young guys all of a sudden just didn't know how to play this course, you know. Finishing out the top 10 here, you have Niklas coming in at tie for fifth. Then you had AB. AB actually had a really good final round, shooting 58 the final round to jump up a whole bunch to tie for seventh with Silas Schultz, Ty Love, another really two young guys there. Then obviously Gannon Burr also finishing out the top 10 for a tie. That's crazy. He missed so many putts, Yuli, and he still got a top 10.
That is nuts.
Going down the leaderboard a little bit here, Chris Clemens had a nice finish at 16th. There's Gavin Rathbun at 17th. Kevin Jones with the top 20 finish. That's nice to see. Luke Humphreys with the top 20. Let's see here. Calvin didn't have a great week, but not really too surprising. You know, we were talking about how forehand, you know, having a good forehand this tournament was going to be, and it seemed like that was probably the case. You know, he finished 34th, which is probably something that wasn't really hoping to go out there and play and get 34th. I'm trying to see what else we have on here. Last cash, you have Jake Wolf, Trevin Crowe, Eric Oakley, Parker Welk, Harper Thompson, and Hauchi Jensen, all getting last cash at 42nd. This also just shows you too, like, this is what we were talking about. The depth is just absolutely crazy, because like, how much different was this course, Yuli, from like a Jonesboro? As far as someone that could play,
it was way different. It was way different. This place was it was a tough course. It really was. I enjoyed the challenge of this course because it was so hard, especially with the wind. That's why Simon's score is so impressive. Like, I didn't think it would be that low. Honestly, I thought the course was pretty challenging. I just thought it could have been better even.
But I do like. Yeah, I agree. I think we got to keep pushing course design, but I do like seeing, again, I'm not hating on any of these guys by saying I like seeing them. I'm just saying I like seeing top players not always just finish in the top five, right? And I think that's only going to happen when you have difficult courses. So you have someone like a Matty O that is Mr. Consistent. He shoots 2 over par, finishes in 81st place this tournament. You have Isaac Robinson, 2 major champions, 71st. Benjamin Callaway, coming off of a second place, finishing in 66, Vino, 66, James Conrad, 66, James Proctor, 61. So like, that to me shows that there is a little bit of grit out there. Now, you know, looking at Simon shoot 30, it's like, oh man, okay, you can still absolutely shred this course, but at least it shows like, hey, if you're not playing that well out there, you can get beat up, which is, that's what you need, right? And now it's making it to where some of Simon's shots, the final round where he's spraying them a little bit and still being able to make birdie, you got to make it to where like his spray shots get penalized and not capitalized. Yeah. So
it's going to penalize everybody. It's not like you're just trying to tiger proof the course. You're just making a better course for what I think would be a better course. And my opinion really doesn't matter. I don't design courses.
A little Manufacturer's Cup update. I know you guys like seeing this. MVP jumps up four spots after that Simon Lizotte finish, taking 35 points for the season. But you still have Discraft in a huge lead with Paul Macbeth, Chris Dickerson, and AB all finishing in the top 10. Discmania is in second place with Nicklaus and Gannon Burr and Silas Schultz. But there you have it. Little Manufacturer's Cup update for all you guys. And if you want to see that graphic more, you can check us out on Twitter. We'll have that graphic there up on Twitter. Biggest storyline, FPO. Has Krista Tatar seen the pushback from her jump putt to where now she's not jump putting anymore? I think that's the biggest storyline. There's been tons and tons of tweets, Facebook posts, Instagram messages of these screenshots of where it's, again, when you can slow it down, you can screenshot it. It's very easy to see the disc is still in her hand. Both feet are off the ground. Now, when you're watching it live, it's very hard. It's more of a bang bang play, but she did not jump putt at all this tournament. Do you think word has gotten back to her and she has noticed, like, hey, I'm doing something that's probably illegal and she's working on it, or just coincidence that she decided not to jump putt at all this tournament?
I don't know. I can't answer for her, but I will say this. Anybody who straddle jump putts is probably foot faulting. Anybody who jump putts at some point is foot faulting, period. It's a horrible rule. It's horrible. Nobody, like, when you see these step putts, you're telling me that at no point, like, sometimes your foot's coming off the ground. That's silly to me. I quit jump putting pretty much altogether from like 40 feet because I got so grilled on my foot touching or my back foot or whatever. But if you watch, just go back and watch anybody jump putt. It's illegal for the most part.
I do like a delayed jump putt. Ezra taught it to me. So it's kind of like a step putt, but then a delayed jump at the end. So I'm staggered and my left foot goes forward, disc comes out, and then I push off my right foot. But if you're doing like a set shot in basketball, basically, that's where it gets real dicey. And that's how most people, I think, jump putt is they do that step shot or that set shot. And I don't know. It will be interesting to see like what happens moving forward with it. But this is where it's like, you know, again, social media wasn't probably as big 10 years ago back on tour with disc golf. Way more people are paying attention to disc golf. Way more people are talking about it. The media is so much higher. You're going to end up getting a lot of these things happening now. And players are going to see it. So I'd be curious to see from Kristen what she thinks of that. All right, Silas, don't throw this graphic up just yet because I want to quiz Yuli here and see. Yuli, there has been, we're going to Champions Cup here, okay? Hole 12 on Champions Cup, par 5, most difficult hole we play all year. There has only been 12 birdies. Since 2021 at Northwood Black, only 12. Three players have gotten it twice, and the rest have gotten it once. I'll give you bonus points if you can tell me the players that got it twice, but let's see how many of the names you can get off of this. So you're looking for 9 players total here.
Okay, I know for a fact AB's gotten it twice. There's
one.
Chris Dickerson?
No.
He threw that in for par? What? There's like a famous shot of him throwing it in from the fairway. I had to...
Sick par.
Mm-hmm. Ricky Wysocki?
He's gotten it twice. There's one more that's gotten it twice, and then you have 6 more guys.
Give me a second. Who got it? I know that somebody There's three names on
here that I do not think you're going to get. But the rest you should get.
Paul McBeth?
Never gotten it.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
There you go. Three. Six more. Garrett's also gotten it twice. So now you...
So that's the three, right?
Now you're looking for the six that have gotten it once. Try thinking of a guy that throws really far. That's kind of like under the radar, and he also like birdies a lot of holes all the time. Where you're like, oh, he would. He's just not incredibly consistent.
Hebenheimer.
That's a good guess. Not him, though. European guy.
Dang. What about
European? Super nice guy.
The European guy.
Sometimes wears like the visor glasses.
Yeah, I'm not going to get that.
Has the bazooka.
Oh, yep. Albert Tom. Okay, he's gotten it. What about Simon? No, you had already made me guess that. So we're down
You're missing a major champion. You're missing a major champion winner. Really? I believe major champion winner. Or maybe second place major Got second at a major?
I'm not going to guess.
Kyle Klein.
Just tell me who they are.
Did Kyle Klein win USCGC? Yes. I was making sure. Mason Ford. Benjamin Page. Ben Callaway. And Nick Robertson.
Okay.
So 12 birdies and 896 attempts, a birdie rate of 1.34. Now there was some people saying like, "Oh, look how crappy this hole is." Guys, here's the thing. This is probably a par 6, okay? It probably is a par 6 to where all these guys are getting eagles, and if you get a 5, it's a birdie. You can't just say because a hole has 1.34% birdie rate, it's a crappy hole. There's no score. There's plenty of scoring separation because you have, yes, only a handful of people have ever made a 4, but there's not that many 5s. And there are 6s. And there are 7s. And there are 8s. And there are 9s. And there are double digits on this guy. This is a great hole.
Great hole. Fantastic.
Because you can step up to that hole, throw 3 great shots and have a chance for birdie, or you can step up to that hole and throw a terrible shot and be like, my best score now is a par. And I like that. Because then if you mess up...
Probably a bogey.
Correct. In some instances, your best score might be a bogey. But the idea of like, you have to play this hole well. The people that get 9s and 10s, they start trying to like chew too much off. I love it. Great hole. Absolutely love it. If you're coming to Champions Cup, it's an awesome hole to just post up on and just watch how different players attack it, because you won't see people play it the same way multiple times. All right, Edwin Stats here. We'll also post this on our Twitter as well if you want to see all the key stats here. But some of the big takeaways, the course actually played one stroke easier this year than last year. So I thought that was a little bit more surprising. That might have been just due to the fact that the field is getting a little bit better, a little bit deeper. There's not as many players at the bottom of the field that are like, you know, inflating the scores. Simon now is just the 5th MPO player since 2019 to repeat at an elite major and event. Simon has 7 wins since the beginning of 2022. The only person that has won less than him is Ricky at 6. Before Simon finished 5th at Jonesboro and winning MCO, his average finish was 34th in 2024. McBeth finishes 2nd after averaging 49th through the first 4 events. Jeremy Colling has, this was his best finish. We kind of mentioned this earlier, since 2019 USDGC. And Silas Schultz has the 2nd best finish of his career and led the event in putting average. So I think that's like the distance of how far your putts are made. Nice. Which might be one of the stats that is the least accurate out of all of them. But there you go. Some interesting stats. And if you want to see more of these stats, you can check that out on our Twitter And shout out to Edwin Stats, as always, for providing that for us. All right, wild story of the week. Last Wednesday was my birthday. My wife came with me for a birthday round of disc golf. She typically doesn't come, so this is a huge win. We went to the course, and wind gusts were about 20 miles per hour, and this hole was a ripping headwind. I decided to shoot from the short tee pad slash drop zone. The traditional shot is overseeing the dam to your left and a water carry to your right. The short tee pad slash drop zone is about 300 feet to the basket. Easiest way to the basket is a hyzer shot over the water. I executed it, and I've never seen an overstable onyx flip up and carry 200 feet directly to my right splash. I'm mad as that shot should not have flipped out of the way, should not have flipped the way it did. I didn't finish the hole and skipped to the next tee pad. My wife notices a disc on top of the basket, brand new cotton candy Flex Raptor with no name or number on it. Happy birthday to me. Now, one of the last holes is a water carry over the dam again, about 300 feet. I decided to throw the Raptor, crossed over, and landed about 100 feet left of the basket where there is a walking path. As I cross to walk to my disc, I see an older gentleman walking his dog. This guy stops, his dog goes over to the Raptor and raises his leg and pisses on the disc. Dog finishes, I make eye contact with the guy, we say nothing to each other, and walked past me like nothing ever happened. I left the disc and walked to the next tee pad. My wife couldn't stop laughing. Juan, that story was all over the place, Juan. That's so, I thought for a second the old guy was going to pick it up and throw it in the basket. I thought you were going to pick it up and go back to the tee pad and ace. Your dog pissed on the dog pissed on your disc.
And now somebody else is going to grab that disc. Like, hey, I got a new disc, Dunzo.
Yeah. I will say in my backyard, sometimes my dogs will go to the bathroom like right behind my basket. And that puts like even more stress on my putting. Because like, I don't want to move my basket. Right. But it's like, I don't want to miss my putt now because I don't want my putt to land in my dog's piss on the ground either. So it's like a little bit more yeah. stress. Good thing. If you have a wild story and you want us to read it here on Tour Life, send it in to our intern, David, wildstorytour@gmail.com, wildstorytour@gmail.com. All right, let's get to some of these listeners' questions. Some of these were good. This is from Tomas. A lot of people talk about warming up, but not many talk about cooling down other than ice baths that some people like Ricky and Yuli take. What sort of other things do y'all do as a cool down after your rounds?
I always say do the same things you did to start your round. So like if you have a stretching deal that you do at the end or before you go out and you're doing that, that's probably the same thing you need to do after your round. And then the extra whatever you do after that.
Yeah, the other thing I would say is like foam rolling. Foam rolling is huge. Foam rolling is really nice. And then if you can do some like Normatec, so some compression pants. Now, those cost quite a penny. So I understand not everyone has the ability to get those. So the other thing you do is like a leg drain. And that's just lay down on the floor, scoot your butt to the wall, lift your legs up against the wall, and just stay like that for about 5 to 7 minutes. You basically let all the blood drain out of your legs. And then when you stand up, you let new blood circulate through. That kind of helps too with some of the fatigue and lactic acid. All right, this comes from Sean. You have said anyone who can't throw farther than 300 feet should not throw any disc that's flat. Two questions. Did you really not know most AMs struggle to get this distance? And can you expand any advice you'd give? Many MA4 players can't throw a putter anywhere close to 300 feet. Okay, so first thing, I don't think I said anything about being able to throw a putter 300 feet. I think that is probably pretty challenging for a lot of people. And I don't remember saying stop throwing a disc that's flat. If I did say that, then that was probably incorrect. I don't really know if... because you think of like an Arobi's board flat and that thing flies forever. So I don't know how much having a disc be domey helps you get more distance. What my point was though, is anyone that is somewhat athletic, should be able to throw over 300 feet. It's the same thing as me saying anyone that's somewhat athletic should be able to run a mile under 8 minutes, right? Like, you're not going to be able to just walk out there and run a mile under 8 minutes, but if you train and you do the right stuff, you will be able to. It's not a feat that is incredibly difficult to have. Same thing as throwing over 300 feet. It's not like dunking a basketball where some people just literally cannot dunk a basketball no matter how much they train. If you train properly, if you have correct form, and if you're throwing the correct disc, you should be able to throw over 300 feet. That was kind of my take. Is that fair to say, Yuli? 300? I feel like 300 feet's a, like that's a different, I feel like that's a fair, it's like a fair thing to assume most people can throw over 300 feet. Have the ability to throw over 300 feet.
Yeah, I think
feet.
One of the things that I try to challenge people to do isn't necessarily like to get a distance feat. It is to shape a disc like a full shape of a disc. Like, get some, if you can get something that flips up and turns over and rides for a little bit and lands in the fairway, that's a fun shot and they're going to enjoy disc golf. Because if you can get something that does this shape, you can pretty much play anything. You know what I mean? And that's the funnest shot to watch play or watch being thrown. And you're going to have to put some sort of power on some sort of disc in order to get it to do that. So quit worrying about the distance. Learn the flights of the discs more. Mm. And then with that, it'll help your form as well develop. That's what I would say.
And that kind of goes back to my point. A lot of people throw too overstable of discs to where with their arm speed, they're never going to get a full flight. So it's trying to figure out like, hey, what disc can I throw? Because what you really want to do is you want to throw that baby hyzer, flips up to flat, turns, and then comes out at the end.
And they make some very understable discs that allow these people to do that. But what happens is, in order to be able to do that, you can't roll the wrist. You got to stay flat through the shot. And it'll really help you with your form without really having to take lessons. But if you do want lessons, I have this thing called the Power Disc Golf Academy, and you can go over there and we go through all kinds of different drills for you to learn those shot shapes.
So hopefully I answered your question there, Sean. All right. Ethan wants to know, was Ricky not coming back in bounds on 18 his fault for throwing by the spotter or the spotter's fault for not paying attention? So I think Ricky went to Twitter and made a post talking about how unfortunate his final drive was. It was coming back in bounds, it looked like, but it skipped. And I don't know if it hit them out of the air or skipped and hit them. Can't remember exactly from the video. It's hard to kind of see, but he was clearly upset that his disc would have been in bounds. And we've seen this before in the past where spectators are kind of in the line of fire occasionally. What is your take on this?
Yeah. My take is, for sure it's the spotter's fault. Get off the line. Have a little room for the disc to come in, because in that headwind, there was a lot of discs going over there. It wasn't just Ricky turning it over into that spot. Be aware of the situation. His disc was coming back in bounds. Almost 90% sure it was coming back in bounds. That's a good shot. You should be rewarded with a good shot, and he wasn't. If I were to put the blame, I'd put it on the spotter, but at the same time, it's an accident. And so you can't really put blame on either side. What, like, those things just happen in sports.
I would say the easiest way to just fix this to where we don't have the issue. And Ricky was on the side of this being, you know, you go back a little bit to Worlds. I think it was Worlds. It might've been GMC. No, it was GMC, the year he won GMC. He threw a shot that was going out of bounds and hit someone's umbrella and stayed in bounds, right? So he's been on both sides of the coin. I don't think this is a good thing for disc golf. Like, I don't think we need to be having spectators dodging and trying to jump over the disc while discs are trying to go back in bounds. Easiest way to fix this, OB line, that's a line, and then the spectator ropes, 15, 20 feet, something off of the OB line. Like, and then that solves everything. Being 10 feet back in disc golf, that's not going to change anything for anyone. So, all right. Nate wants to know, should the 2 meter rule be in effect at all tournaments?
No okay. tournaments yep, ever.
I agree. I think it's the worst rule ever. John says, let me explain. Because some people be like, well, you didn't make an explanation. Throwing a disc into a tree is a bad shot. No one's trying to throw a disc into a tree. So the idea that some bad shots into a tree stay in the tree and get more penalized than some that filter out is a dumb rule. They're both bad. They both should be penalized. And they are by hitting a tree and losing a lot of distance. John says, this is a great question. In a full MPO tournament, where would a Kristen Tatar and Evelina Solomon scramble team finish? So for those that don't know what scramble is, they're both throwing a tee shot. They're taking the best tee shot.
Throwing
the second shot from there. They're both putting. So they both get two shots and they're taking the best one each time. Yeah, I think there's a great question.
I think they cash. I was going to say
the same exact thing. I think certain courses they cash. I think other courses they do not cash. Because there's going to be too many holes that they can't birdie. That might be the best pairing of players to be able to compete in an MPO tournament. Yeah, that would be exciting to see. Like, that would be a fun video for them, those two, to go out and play and see what they would shoot on an MPO layout.
But they'd have to do it 4 times.
Well, yeah, but maybe just for a video, just do it once. All right, this is from G Money. If Paul would have won, would he have been invited on Tour Life this week? If so, do you think he would have accepted the invite? Yuli, I'll let you answer the second one. Do you think he would have accepted the invite? Okay.
Yes.
If he would have won, would he have been invited? That is a good question. We haven't really brought up this topic in quite some time. I feel like everyone's kind of moved on past it. I respect Paul's game. I definitely do. So I think I would be able to have him come on and keep it like that. Does it bum me out that I haven't gotten anything from him? Yeah, that kind of sucks. His wife did reach out a while ago and sent a long message apologizing for a lot of stuff, which was nice, but I wasn't friends. Like, I wasn't close friends with his wife. Like, that, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was a weird thing. Similar to like someone's dad reaching out and apologizing for, I would like it coming from Paul. I definitely think we could bury the hatchet for sure. It's been, you know, people say like time kind of heals everything, right? Like, as stuff goes by, you get more perspective, you kind of see some stuff. So I'm definitely open to it. I've said that from the beginning. If he ever wants to talk and try to like get to a decent spot, I'm open to it. I've never not respected his game and his play style. I think he's a very good player. You know, there were just some things that bummed me out from the friendship that we had at one point. So hopefully that answers your question, G-Money. All right, Cardzilla. Should the Disc Golf Pro Tour be talking more about the story of two pregnant moms playing on the tour? I feel like that's a big story. They could do a better job of highlighting the stories of the sport because that attracts people to tune in. Where did they finish? Oh, wow. Katrina Allen had a top 10. Katrina finished 8th. Granted, it was 19 shots off the lead. And then Macy finished 14th, which was 24 shots off the lead.
It's pretty good.
Macy's like pregnant. I saw a clip where Zach Melton was talking to her. And like, she's pregnant playing. Like, you got to think that gets in your way of your form, right?
Gotta change your form for
like,
sure.
Just even like a the weight, bit. Like your weight distribution.
Yeah, it's gotta change. So yeah, I think, yeah, for sure. I'm guessing that there's a little story in there.
That's probably the hardest thing in sports is these storylines, like creating these storylines, going into these tournaments. That takes a lot of work, takes a lot of like research. But it is the thing that like kind of tunes a lot of people into play, right? Like the Caitlin Clark hysteria where everyone was going nuts with Caitlin Clark. Like that was a lot of built up storylines. A lot of stuff was building up to talk about that. So I do think that's probably the weakest part of the Disc Golf Pro Tour is A, they just don't have the storylines going out there. And if they do, they just don't really get distributed, right? Like these press conferences, like not that many people are watching them. They are starting to try to clip stuff out of these press conferences, which is huge. To think that a lot of people are going to sit down and watch. How long are these press conferences? You like an hour and a half?
They're so long.
Right? So I think that's what they need to start doing is like clipping out. Eagle said this, and it's a 15-second clip, and they post it on Instagram and Twitter. Like that's more of that stuff. They need more of that stuff. Quick hitting stuff. The long form stuff is tough for people's attention spans to stay through the whole way. But yeah, two pregnant ladies out there dominating or at least playing incredible. It's pretty impressive. Eric Dixon says they are literally growing the sport. all right. This week in Foundation Disc Golf, not too much to talk about really. Honestly, we've got some new discs on the website. If you guys want to go check those out. You can also link in the description. We also have a link where you can click and you can get deals sent to your phone via text, which is pretty cool. So if you haven't joined that, definitely check that out. We're definitely gearing up for Worlds. We've got our 2024 Tour Series disc still available for everyone. You can check out all of our stuff. Oh, go, Yuli. Yeah.
It's finally here. Ooh. Some of it. On Monday, on the Discraft site under my name, we are released. This is new merch. This is new people were talking merch about right that. Here. Dude, check this out.
Oh, this yeah. Is that like a skeleton captain?
You like that?
Oh, that's sick.
Yeah, it's like a skeleton captain on the back. So we got some merch coming out and some discs, and that's happening on Monday. And then my jerseys are coming out in a couple months. So I'm excited about that. Be on the lookout for that. I'm going to be pushing it big time over the next couple months.
Heck yeah. And you guys already know we have a bunch of Tour Life merch available on foundationdiscgolf.com as well. Nathaniel Williams said, did either of you see Silva's interview? How can she practice to do a better one in the future? I did not see her interview. What happened? I'm sure the language barrier.
I didn't see it.
I'm guessing he's claiming that she didn't do a good interview. And I'm assuming it's the language. Like, language barriers probably got to be pretty tough for a lot of so these hard. European players. You know, English not being your first language.
I wouldn't be able to do a interview anywhere
also
else.
Also, too, like, the other thing to think about is, like, the majority of people, if you put a camera in front of them, they're very awkward. Like they get very awkward. A lot of people get shy. Some people say stupid stuff. Like throwing a camera in front of the majority of people, it's not a good product. And so it literally just takes practice. I'm sure Yuli, you're probably the same way when you started doing YouTube videos and stuff. Like the first couple, you probably weren't that good. But now you're super natural. Everyone just thinks it like, oh, it must just come naturally for Yuli. He's always been like this. But the majority of people suck at the beginning.
Yeah, you got to practice. You have to practice. Like when I first started doing clinics, it was one of the scariest things I've ever done. I'll never forget my first ever clinic, national tour in Oregon. And they told me, hey, we want you to do a sidearm clinic. And I was probably like 19. And I remember just being like, oh my gosh, I have to talk in front of these people. You know, I'd watch Dave and Avery do all these clinics. Man, I went home and I studied and I wrote out basically like a speech of the key points of where I was going to go. Like I came super prepared and I was still awful. It was tough, man. And you're right. It just takes practice. You just got to practice.
Yuli's hat will be available on the website and on teamdiscraft.com, I'm assuming, on Yuli's little drop-down menu. And would you say on Monday? Yeah, Monday.
Yeah,
one thing I'm very thankful that my mom, you know, in retrospect, looking back, that my mom made all of us do as kids, she always put us in really awkward situations that we didn't want to be in. So if we were at a restaurant, she would make us have to order at a young age. If we were out and about at a store, she would make us have to go up to the clerk or someone that was working there to ask them a question. And, you know, when you're a kid like that, you just never wanted to do that. Like that was, you got so scared talking to strangers like that. So that was really useful. And then also like going through college ultimate frisbee, I was able to kind of be behind the ranks my first year. Then I had a little bit bigger role my second year, and then a really big role my third. And then I led the team my fourth and fifth season. So that kind of was a nice transition to where I got comfortable talking in front of a bunch of people. And it's easier, obviously, talking to a bunch of people that you're like close to than strangers. So yeah, it just takes a while. He said Silva is super solid as a player, so she is going to get the reps in the interview booth. Didn't mean to put her on blast. Thanks for the awesome. No, I would say the majority of disc golfers are bad in front of the camera and on the mic. They just are. And it's just because there's a huge lack. I mean, think about how many podcasts there are 5 years ago. Think of how many podcasts there were to have people come on to talk, like Smashbox. That was it. That was like really, right? Like, I guess the PDGA has like PDGA radio or something that maybe some people went on, but now there's so many. You have the Nick and Matt show, you have the Upshot, you have our show, you have so many different podcasts now to where more and more players are getting more and more opportunities to get in front and to get on a mic. So it'll just happen in time. Ricky's a perfect example too. Ricky went from being super awkward, not very good in front of a camera and mic, to where now he's probably one of the best on the mic, just as far as like personality goes and interest. So it just takes time. All right, Silas, Tour Life merch update. Where are we at?
Tour Life merch. All right, for Grip Locked, first off, we
no
got...
No audio.
No audio.
Now you're back.
Here you are.
What? Oh, we're back.
You never said anything.
You said Tour Life and then you cut off.
Oh. All right.
You're back now.
Okay. Grip Locked, we got 294. So they're starting to creep up to 300.
Oh my gosh, they're about to hit 300.
Watch out. But Tour Life still's got the lead, 341. So we're still cruising pretty good.
Let's see if we can get over 350 by next show, guys. You can pick up hats. We've got hoodies. We've got where is that stuff?
I had somebody asking me for that 2 days ago for a hoodie.
Julie, do you have 40 seconds to talk about something while I go grab something?
Just give me a topic and I'll roll.
Talk about what is the best plastic in disc golf.
Oh my gosh, it's a no-brainer. Well, first, if you're just talking manufacturers, it's got to be Discraft, no-brainer, absolutely. But then my favorite plastic, without a doubt, is Z-Plastic. I think that's the best plastic, even though I throw a lot of ESP. Z-Plastic beats in the best, I feel like. I think it beats in the best because it stays stable the longest, so the flight characteristics don't change. It takes a long time for them to change over time, so you have the same disc and the same flight for a longer time, and then it just gets a lot better. That was 40 seconds. Thank goodness. I was getting so nervous without you.
How'd I do?
Thank you for coming back. You're so fast. You're the fastest.
Something that people have been asking a lot about. I don't know when these will drop, so definitely just kind of pay attention to the website. We got Tour Life minis.
Let's go. Those are sick.
We got nice
On the site. They're on the site right now. Yeah.
All right.
FoundationDisc.com.
Foundation Disc.
Oh, this is a perfect.
Look at these things.
It's a perfect opportunity for them to get very inexpensive little mini. Let's get to 400 next week.
You guys
400.
Everyone get
a mini,
and we get to 400 items sold. These things are sick. Go pick up some minis or pick up a couple minis.
Hey, go like this. Hey, trick shot. Behind you, throw one in the basketball hoop.
I'll do that on the way out. I have more stuff to show. More stuff to show.
Look at this.
We got patches you can put on your bag.
Oh.
Are these live on the site too, Silas?
Yeah. Yeah, they're on the site.
Oh my gosh, we got bag patches. Bag patches.
They're only $5 too.
Love that.
Shout out to the Bogey Bros.
Basically giving them
away. Bogey Bros bag patch. Hey, if you do like Grip Lock, they've got their bag patch. We've got a in the bag patch. These Dark Horse ones are sick. Rainbow Dark Horse. Then we've got the Yuli Horse bag patches. These are disgusting.
Really cool.
And let me see. Maybe we have one more. Yes, one more bag patch. And that is going to be just the classic old school Foundation Disc Golf bag patch. So a lot of cool stuff on the site right now. I don't know how fast these minis will go. I'm sure some of the desired colors will go pretty quick. So definitely go check out the site, foundationdiscgolf.com. A lot of cool stuff. Thanks to all of our new Tour Life members on here. Everyone that's a part of the Tour Life crew, we appreciate you guys. Thank you so much. We are going into championship week here with Champions Cup. First major of the year. Does the Yuli Horse count towards Tour Life? Yes, it does. That's where we'll be. I fly up there tomorrow, Yuli. Excited to get a practice round in. And we'll kind of see how the first major of the year goes for us. Should be fun.
This is the hardest course we're going to play. They changed a few holes. They added a couple new ones, and they're harder.
I'm looking forward to the challenge.
Like, you're gonna love it.
So definitely tune into that, guys. I think that will be on the Disc Golf Network. Should be free on YouTube on Thursday, and it's a 4-round event. I guess are they doing a cut after the third round? I'm assuming. No cut.
I don't think so. I don't think there's a cut this year.
Okay, not a fan of that. But all right. Well, that is going to do it for this week. We appreciate all you guys tuning in. We hope you all have a phenomenal week and enjoy the coverage this week at Champions Cup. 4 rounds at Northwood. Hopefully me and Yuli survive, and we'll be back here next week. Have a good one, folks.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you need to work quickly and confidently across different apps and platforms, consistent quality communication is key. Whether you're writing documents, emails, or presentations, you need Grammarly. It's an AI writing partner that helps you get your work done faster with better writing. It's always there to help because it works where you work, across 500,000 apps and websites, so you can get more done no matter where you're writing. Grammarly is the gold standard of responsible AI, trusted by millions of professionals for 15 years. It gives you personalized writing suggestions based on your audience, goals, and context. Plus, tone suggestions to help you navigate even the most difficult work conversations. 96% of users agree Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's GRAMMARLY.com/podcast. Grammarly, easier said, done.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.